Injured in a car accident? We cap attorney's fees at 30% of the first million. Any recovery above that is all yours. No recovery, no fees or costs. If another lawyer wants more, Lawyer Up 904. For accidents, injuries, and more, Lawyer Up 904. Jacksonville.
The sports world keeps spinning, and the local conversation continues. Now, Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Monday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM with Dylan Denmark. The Hacker, Ryan Green with you. Glad you are with us. My goodness, what a weekend. My goodness, what an afternoon in the world of sports. You want to talk about just a Gordon Solie shot to the solar plexus for the United States men's soccer team over there in Qatar. Did I say that right, Denmark? Qatar, not Qatar.
That is correct.
Man, I have been bothered about that for the last 4 hours. The United States was on the doorstep of getting 3 points and beating Wales. Nope, not to be. 10 minutes to go in regulation, basically. A penalty kick. Wales scores. The United States ends in a 1-1 draw. And now they're in a fair amount of trouble of not getting out of the group. They play England on Friday. That should bode well. England beat Iran today 6-2 and is clearly one of the favorites in this World Cup. But not an awful start. That would have been a loss, but certainly not a start the United States needed, especially after leading a majority of that game. So we'll get into that a little bit, but obviously it's all football. It's rivalry week. It is here. You want to talk about limping in. Florida's not even limping in. Florida's on crutches. They're battered. They're bruised. Their heads are just wrapped in gauze. What was that in Nashville, Tennessee? That's where we're going to start in just a moment. That was horrifically bad by Billy Napier, the coaching staff, and all involved with the Florida Gators on Saturday. Let me set the scene for you. Coming up in about 20 minutes, so, as always on Monday nights here on Hacker After Dark, it's time for a little Monday night coaching with my man Dave Campo, former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. You get him on XL Primetime, you get him on the fifth quarter, and you get him here Monday nights with me on Hacker After Dark. So we'll look at the Jaguars as they begin the seven-game journey to the end of the year on Sunday as Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens come in, a game you'll hear right here on 1010XL. So Dave Campo, 20 minutes away. In the 9 o'clock hour, right about 9:15 or so, former Florida Gator All-American tight end Ben Troop will join me. We'll look back on whatever that was in Nashville on Saturday, but primarily we'll look ahead to Florida, Florida State on Friday night, Black Friday, the Gators and the Noles at Doak Campbell Stadium in the state capital. So former Gator All-American tight end Ben Troop coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And at the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour, my friend John Shipley of Jaguar Report, as we'll look at this Jaguar-Raven matchup on Sunday. So we got a ton to do. Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us as always. And as always, here on Hacker After Dark, we will kick it off with a big deal of the night. And Dylan Denmark, let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
The stage was set, right? Florida State at 8-3, ranked in the top 20. Well, they held up their end of the bargain. Going into the bye week at 4-3, they had what many thought was a very, very winnable second half of the season, and they have done just that with victories over Georgia Tech, Miami, Syracuse, and Louisiana. The Noles come in to Friday night at Doak Campbell Stadium, 8-3, feeling awfully good about things. So all Florida had to do was beat Vanderbilt, a team that had not beat Florida in Nashville since 1988. I was 5 years old on that day when Vanderbilt beat Florida in 1988. I have a 3-year-old son now. That's how long it's been. I was 5 the last time Florida lost in Nashville, Tennessee to the Commodores. I now have a 3-year-old son. You are talking 34 years since Florida lost in Nashville. And they didn't just lose on Saturday. They got embarrassed. They got outcoached. They got outplayed. And for the first time since the Georgia game, and this is something I had been worried about for the Gators, something I had been interested in, to their credit, it did not happen against Texas A&M. It did not happen against South Carolina. They looked disinterested at times. They were committing stupid penalties. The turnovers, my gosh, the turnovers. That punt fumble, who was that, Jason Marshall? Why is he even back there is a great question. The missed tackles, just the nonsense. Look, with all due respect to my man Tony Smith on Jaguars Today, who is basically the only Vanderbilt fan that I know in Jacksonville, Florida, Vanderbilt is not better than the Gators. They're not even close to being better than the Gators. But what Vanderbilt did on Saturday that Florida did not is Vanderbilt played a good, solid football game. Vanderbilt didn't make ridiculous penalties, ridiculous turnovers. They didn't miss an unbelievable amount of tackles. Give Vandy credit. They wanted the win. They went out there and they got the win. And they embarrassed Florida in the process. Which brings me to Billy Napier. All the goodwill, all the pats on the back and everything that this Gator program has had since the second half in College Station and last week against South Carolina, all of that goodwill was crushed and destroyed in that 31-24 loss to the Vanderbilt Commodores. So Billy Napier, to me, the coaching staff, to me, maybe a little bit more pressure on them on Friday night now than there would have been if they had beaten Vanderbilt. They're staring 6-6 in the face. They're staring losses to all four rivals in the face. They've already lost to Tennessee. They've already lost to LSU. They've already lost to Georgia. And unless you bleed orange and blue and have the goggles on, I don't know why you would pick them to go into Tallahassee and win with the way Florida State's playing. That loss to Vandy is going to put a bitter taste in a lot of mouths going into the offseason. Now, having said that, if they have a great recruiting class, if they do well in the transfer portal, that loss will be forgotten in a couple of months. But for the here and now, it's like getting kicked below the belt by a mule. It was awful. Watching that game was awful. And I'll tell you this too. Anthony Richardson threw for over 400 yards. That's wonderful. On the final play of the game, they're at the Vanderbilt, 35-yard line roughly? He threw the Hail Mary into row G of the stands. I've never seen anything like it. I have never in my life seen anything like it. I went back and rewound and did a double take to make sure that actually happened. It is the final play of the game. You are not getting another snap. And you throw it into row G of the stands? What on earth? Anthony Richardson, there's some head-scratching moments he's had this year. And look, he's a terrific talent. There's no doubt about that. If I was a gambling man, I would probably be under the assumption that Friday night is his final game in a Gator uniform. There really is no reason why he would play in a bowl game if he's not coming back next year. But I got to tell you, there are just some things that Anthony Richardson does with the ball that A, amaze you, and B, perplex you. It's absolutely unbelievable. Some of the great things you get out of Anthony Richardson and some of the just mind-boggling things that you get out of Anthony Richardson. So Florida loses. They go into Tallahassee wounded. If you're Florida State, you got a great opportunity ahead of you. A great opportunity. You already wiped the floor with Miami a couple of weeks ago. You beat the tar out of the Hurricanes 45-3. If you put another walloping on your rival, if you beat Florida by 2 touchdowns plus on Friday night, this is your state. You control the state of Florida, which is a valuable thing, not just in recruiting, but also in the transfer portal. And I got to tell you, the matchup is terrible for the Gators. Just terrible. What does Florida not do well a majority of the year on defense? Stop the run. What is Florida State amazing at? Running the football. What does Florida not do well? Stop mobile quarterbacks. What does Florida State have? A very mobile quarterback in Jordan Travis. Is Florida going to have any answers for Johnny Wilson? I doubt it. Defensively, that Florida State D-line, it's going to be loud. Those people in Tallahassee, look, Seminole fans, I know how you feel about this game. I got relatives, I got friends that bleed garnet and gold. I've heard all about it. My goodness, have I heard all about it. Having said that, you better hope you win, because some of you have been very unflattering on social media.
I have always liked Florida State.
Basketball, Denmark. The Pat Kennedy basketball camp. I was also a fan of the Animals there at Dick Houser Stadium back in the day. My memories of Florida State football are almost being trampled to death in 1996 when I was 13, when Florida State decided to rush the field after beating number one Florida. Of course, the Gators would have something to say about that 6 weeks later in New Orleans. My memories of Florida State are sitting in the south end zone of Ben Hill Griffin Stadium and seeing Warrick Dunn run right towards me as a 10-year-old little boy, just completely shattering my soul. And, of course, Tomerick Vanover did not get called for a block in the back on that play. It's been 29 years. It was still a block in the back. In 1994, I was at Doak Campbell, 31-3. I was talking smack to Seminole fans, Denmark. I was letting them hear my 11-year-old thoughts. And then Danny Cannell and Rock Preston. It wasn't even Warrick Dunn. Rock Preston just leads an unbelievable comeback. 31-31. There has never been a tie in the history of sports that felt more like a loss than Gator fans felt on November, what was that, November 30th, I want to say, 1994. In the swamp for 2003, Jack Childress, the ACC ref. 6-7 fumbles all go Florida State's way with the call, to the point where Jeremy Foley after that game said, "We no longer want Atlantic Coast Conference officials in our stadium." See, but that was back when I was just a fan. That was back when I bled orange and blue. Now, I'm an objective broadcast journalist. I sit here and I analyze the facts. And the moment I ripped the Gators, "Oh, Hacker, you're losing your Gator card. You're losing this, you're losing that." Well, so be it. Take it. Because Florida's going to get worked on Friday night. It's Monday. I'll go ahead and tell you, I don't like the Gators in this game. Not only is Florida State more talented, not only is Florida State flat out just better, not only do I think Mike Norvell probably needs this one more than Billy Napier, that crowd at night bringing in a wounded Gator team in Tallahassee, are you kidding me? Florida doesn't win there at night.
Don't get boat raced.
That's the goal. Thank you, Coach. The last time Florida won at Doak Campbell at night, I want to say it was 2004, maybe. That was the Seattrick phase-in, the Ron Zook Field game. I think every other time Florida's won in Doak Campbell, it's been at like a noon kick because both teams were awful.
I think the 2012 game was a 3:30 kick.
Yeah, that was three.
It
might have been 3:30,
but it wasn't a night game.
Yeah, and that was
Matt Jones, Will Muschamp.
Yeah, you know what? No. I think that was night. I think you're right. I think that was a night game with EJ Manuel getting hammered by Dominic Easley and Ronald Powell. Yeah, you might be right. It's okay.
I think it was a 3:30 kick that ended at night, but.
Well, whatever. It was a night game in the fourth quarter when the game got decided. That's good enough for me. So maybe Florida has had a little bit more success in Doak Campbell at night. I just have awful memories of like 1990 when Casey Weldon hit Lawrence Dossie on the second play of the game. That was my first ever experience in college football. The first game I ever went to in my life was in November of 1990. I was 7 years old. And Florida State gave the Gators the beating 45-30. And I just get the sense that Seminole fans, that Seminole football team, they smell blood in the water. The caveat to that is this. If you're not going to beat Florida this year in your Florida State, then you got a problem. And if Florida makes me wrong, proves me to be wrong, and if Florida goes in there and wins, again, I don't believe they are, but if they do, well, then the postgame narrative is a lot different. Because this is a bad Gator football team. This is a Gator football team that survived South Florida. This is a Gator football team that survived Missouri. This is a Gator football team that just lost to Vanderbilt. If you're Florida State, you have to win this game on Friday night. If you're not going to get Florida now when you get them at home and they're bad, when are you going to get them? Because the next time Florida goes to Tallahassee, which will be in 2024, barring anything unforeseen, they're probably going to be a lot better than they are right now. A lot better. That's the plan. If you believe in Billy Napier, you believe in what they're doing, by 2024, Florida should be consistently winning and in the top 20, top 15 teams in America. So it is a gigantic opportunity for Florida State, but good grief, it is one they absolutely need to get. We'll have a lot of Florida State guys on. Again, we're only on 3 days this week because of Thanksgiving. We'll kick it off tonight with former Gator All-American tight end Ben Troop. Quickly to the World Cup, and we're going to get into the NFL coming up with Dave Campo in less than 10 minutes. Man, that hurts today. That hurts. The United States beating Wales 1-0. Tim Weah with a goal. It was outstanding. 82nd minute. Give Wales credit. They had the ball. They were pressing the entire second half. The United States commits just an ill-advised tackle. Look, I'm not a soccer aficionado, but any of you on Twitter saying that was a bad call, you're nuts. That was the definition of a penalty in the box. Wales converts the penalty kick, a 1-1 draw. So instead of getting 3 points for the win, the U.S. only gets 1 point. And now they play one of the favorites in England, and then they'll finish with Iran. You need to tie England and beat Iran to have any shot of advancing, in my opinion. And I don't think you're going to beat England because they are ridiculously good, and the United States is one of the youngest teams there. It's not just good enough to get to a World Cup. You got to get out of the group stage if you're the U.S. And they are in absolute danger of that now because they blew that lead today. We'll see. What a Friday it's going to be. If you are any sort of sports fan, any sort of – you don't even need to be a soccer fan necessarily. You got the United States and England in an event like the World Cup on Friday afternoon, which will lead into Florida and Florida State on Friday night. It'll be absolutely spectacular sports theater, and I am very, very fired up about it. I'm also fired up that the Jaguars get back on the field on Sunday, 7 games to go. For those of you counting, and I don't know why you would be, but for those of you counting, the Jaguars are 3 games out of the final playoff spot with 7 to go. Not that it matters. You're going to at minimum have to go 6-1, probably 7-0 to have any shot. But it starts with 1 game. Unfortunately, that's Baltimore. That's Lamar Jackson. And if you'll rewind the clock back to what Daniel Jones and the New York Giants did to you with RPOs, with run-pass options, what Daniel Jones did to you, what do you think Lamar Jackson is going to do to you? So I really, really hope in the bye week they fix that, because if they didn't, it is going to be a long, long day. As always, we are streaming for your viewing pleasure on the 1010XL YouTube page. Just go to 1010XL. You'll see Hacker After Dark there on YouTube. Also on Twitter at 1010XL. You'll find us there on Twitter. Show is broadcasting until 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, former Gator tight end Ben Troop, also John Shipley of Jaguar Report. Coming up next, It's time for a little Monday night coaching with Campo, my friend Dave Campo, former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Let's talk Jaguars. Let's talk changes that need to be made over the next seven games. And let's preview Baltimore coming in here on Sunday with Dylan Denmark. The Hacker Ryan Green with you, Jacksonville. We are glad we're with us. Rivalry week, Thanksgiving week. It's a Monday night. We're on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Campo's Coaching Corner on Hacker After Dark. Now, another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL at 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. It is a Monday evening, and we are glad you are with us Monday nights here on Hacker After Dark. Well, it means a little Monday night coaching. You've heard of Monday morning quarterbacking. Well, we have Monday night coaching with Campo, my friend Dave Campo, former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Coach, I hope the bye week was good to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, Hack. And to be honest with you, it was kind of fun. I was a little disappointed at first because I really liked the coaching part that I do, of our team, the Jaguars. But it was fun kind of not having to, zero in as much and kind of watch a bunch of football.
I did, too. I was locked into the Red Zone channel, and boy, I almost needed a smoke after that. That was 7 hours of pure bliss yesterday watching the Red Zone channel. I love that thing. And I'll tell you this, Coach, watching the 2021 quarterback class yesterday, Zach Wilson with the Jets was awful. Justin Fields appears to be a running back that occasionally throws the ball, and when he throws the ball, it normally doesn't work out very well. Mac Jones appears to be just a guy. I got to tell you, I came away more and more happy the Jaguars landed Trevor Lawrence in last year's draft class based on what I saw yesterday.
Yeah, no question. I mean, there's no question of what the upside of Trevor is in comparison to those other guys. There was a reason he was taken with the first pick. As you always say, you know, the next seven ball games are going to be critical for him to continue to progress and get better. But, you know, you look at those other guys, they, obviously every quarterback needs some guys around them. And you know, both three of those guys you talked about don't have great guys around them. I think Zach Wilson is who he is. He's just kind of a guy that can, you know, work with the guys he's got with him. Justin Fields, you know, he's improving from week to week, but really his key is running the football. He's not a great accurate thrower, and Mac Jones is who he is. So, you know, to me, this guy right here, Trevor Lawrence, has all the tools. The better he gets, the better we're going to be, and we need to surround him with, in my opinion, a number one receiver.
I look at that New York Jets team, and I think what they could be if Trevor Lawrence was their quarterback. I mean, their defense was fantastic yesterday. They did a lot of nice things, but, man, Zach Wilson just left an awful lot to be desired. Quickly, before we dive back into the Jaguars, I want to talk about the team that you coached in the NFL, the Dallas Cowboys. What a statement yesterday. Going into 8-1 Minnesota and beating them 40-3, my goodness, what a performance by the Cowboys.
Well, you know, first of all, that doesn't surprise me from the standpoint that the Cowboys seem to make a statement in two or three ball games during the year, but then when they get into the playoffs, they don't produce. And, you know, their backs are a little bit against the wall, even though they've got a really good record. The NFC East is a tough division. And, you know, they're going to have to continue to win to get themselves into position. If they don't win a division, they might not make the playoffs. But, you know, that's been their mode the whole time for a long time is they have talent. If they show up, they play well. And they certainly did yesterday. I mean, you know, they've got some guys that can make plays. And, you know, I'm a fan, you know that, of Dak Prescott. You know, I really think that he's got the ability to do it, but, you know, the guys around him have to produce as well.
Monday Night Coaching with Campo, my man Dave Campo, former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah, looking at the NFC East, the crazy thing about that, Washington is in last place at 6-5. It's incredible that every team in that division is 6-5 or better. The Eagles at 9-1, the Cowboys and the Giants both at 7-3, and the Commanders at 6-5. All right, Coach, the bye week is in the books. Jaguars back to work. Coming off the bye, coming off, what, 3 or 4 days off, if you're Doug Peterson, what's today like around the office? What do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish with the players as they start rolling back in?
Well, you're hopeful, number one, that there's an added excitement to, you know, being back and ready to go after it. Because when you take a few days off, and I'm sure those guys watch games on TV, you know, they see what other teams are doing. They know that, you know, there have been some lost opportunities with this football team in the last month. You know, I think there will be added excitement in the building, and I think you play off of that. You know, I think you go in and, you know, this they're going to get an extra practice this week, and you know, ramp up those practices. Here's the crazy thing about the way the league is run today. The Jaguars only have one more padded practice for the rest of the year. It's crazy the way this collective bargaining agreement has made this football. So I would think that this is a very important ball game against the Ravens, and I think they would crank it up with a padded practice with time between now and the ball game, and hopefully you know that juices the guys up a little bit, and they've had an opportunity with really with three extra practices during the week before and this week that they can clean up some things.
I would imagine the players enjoyed themselves on their time off. I don't think you really ever have time off as a coach. If you're Mike Caldwell, Press Taylor, Doug Peterson, how did they spend this past weekend, Coach?
Well, you know, they did have some time off. You know, you give them a little bit of time to kind of refocus or whatever it is. And I'm sure that Caldwell and Harwell, the special teams coach, and Press and the offensive guys are in their mind looking back through what they've done and where they need to go forward. I'm going to tell you this. I can tell you right now, if I was going to give them any advice over there with Jacksonville, the first thing I would do is simplify what's going on defense, because they're making way too many mistakes. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of, you know, it's not how much you do, it's what you do when you do it. And I think they really need to simplify and get back to fundamentals and play ball.
No, I certainly agree. And you were very outspoken about that, particularly the last time out against Kansas City, because Mahomes threw 4 touchdowns. And on each of those 4 touchdown passes, you could argue there was either a bust in coverage, or B, just simply guys not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
I think really defensively, when you look at, you know, our defense, that's kind of been the deal the whole year. You know, if there's a big run against them, there was a guy out of the gap. If they have some guys, they make a mistake, play man coverage, and a guy that can't run gets run by. So, you know, I think there was some miscalculation at the beginning. I think they would admit that. That they were, you know, doing a little bit too much man without guys that can play man-to-man. And now they're playing zone, but they can't, you know, go all over the place with a bunch of different zones and a bunch of different goal line defenses and this and that. They've got to simplify, like I said, and just play ball. They've got some guys that can play ball. That's what they need to do.
Couple of more for Dave Campo, Monday Night Coaching with Campo here on Hacker After Dark. Coach, before we look at the Ravens, quickly, it's the middle of the year, right? 10 down, 7 to go. I don't know how much you can really change, but from a fan base point of view, when they see the Jaguars out there against Baltimore on Sunday, will it look different? Will the defense and the offense put in some different things they've worked on over the bye? Can you do that in that amount of time?
I think you can probably do that on offense, but I'm going to repeat again, they need to simplify on defense. So offensively, I think you'll see a few new wrinkles, because I think the offensive football team is improving from week to week. And that's something that, you know, that you've got to do. You've got to be able to look at Baltimore. And I'm going to tell you, when we talk Baltimore here, you know, Baltimore's defense, there's some specific things you have to do to have a chance to win offensively. And that's what they'll be working on for sure.
Well, let's dive in right now to the Baltimore Ravens. Look, all you have to say are those two words, right? Baltimore Ravens. You know they're going to be physical. You know they're going to be well coached. Their coach, John Harbaugh, is probably going to be in Canton, Ohio, and the Pro Football Hall of Fame one day. Certainly it is going to be a tough game for Jacksonville this week.
No question. And again, I think they're different on both sides of the ball, yet the same. What you just said about being physical, that's their whole approach to everything. You know, running to the football, guys whipping guys up front offensively. You know, they're really, I think they're at least – in the top two or three in rush yards, you know, they're going to try to run the ball down your throat. So you're going to have to buckle it up front. That's number one. And the thing that makes them tough offensively is they're a power and a read combination team. In other words, they're going to run the hard stuff, but then they're going to run the read option with Lamar being able to run the football. That really puts pressure on the defense. From a defensive standpoint, up front, they're tough to run on. And that puts pressure on you to manufacture some runs that give you an opportunity to get going. And their pass rush, especially on third down, I mean, you know, they're extremely good rushing the passer. They've got a bunch of guys with sacks. They've got 31 sacks, which is pretty darn good. And they're a turnover machine. You know, they're very high in the turnover ratio. I think they're ninth or tenth in the league in turnovers, which is, you know, that's something that we cannot turn the ball over and have a chance to win in this game. They will run the clock out if they have to, if they have too many possessions.
You know, we always hear about in the postseason, you got to get the bye week, right? You got to get the bye week and the home field advantage. Yeah, you don't really ever hear that in the regular season. How much of an advantage will it be for Jacksonville on Sunday that they were off last week, whereas Baltimore had a physical game against Carolina?
I think it's an advantage. I mean, you know, times have changed a little bit, and I don't know why, to be honest with you. I've been out of the NFL for a while now, but it seems to me that in the old days, the bye week was huge, you know, and, of course, we fought to get it. During the Super Bowl years, because you give you guys a chance to heal up a little bit. One of them, the last ball game to get the bye week, Emmitt Smith played the whole game almost with a dislocated shoulder. We had the bye week. He comes back and he's full go. So that is an advantage, but it doesn't seem like the home field is as much of an advantage in today's game. And I don't know what the answer is to that, but I know if you have a chance to heal up, that's a plus for sure.
You mentioned Lamar Jackson. All right, we remember what Daniel Jones did to the Jaguar defense with RPOs. My goodness. Now you times that by about 10, what Lamar Jackson brings to the table. I mean, all Baltimore has to do is watch that Giants film. The Jaguars could not stop a Daniel Jones RPO situation. So I don't have a lot of confidence, Coach, that they're going to stop Lamar Jackson. Maybe they can at least try to contain Lamar Jackson. You're a defensive guy. What would be your advice to Mike Caldwell on how to do that?
Well, first of all, I think when you look at Lamar, I watched two games on him, and I'll watch some more, obviously, before the week's out. But he's not really a scrambler to run. His runs come on designated quarterback runs, just like Jones did. You know, the read option, they have the power game with a quarterback running the football, running what we call a kick-out power team. Those are how he makes his runs. So when you talk about the bye week being an advantage, those three extra practices give you an opportunity to make sure that you have all of those runs schemed up to make sure that your guys know who's got the quarterback. You know, they have an extra blocker when they run the quarterback power. So, you know, those are things that you can work on specifically to give you a chance to stop those kind of plays. So hopefully they will have worked on those And I would have to think that we're going to play those better than we did against Daniel Jones.
Final moments here with head coach Dave Campo. All right, coach, we got about 2 minutes to go. I'm going to ask you this every Monday for the rest of the year. What do you want to see out of Trevor Lawrence this upcoming week?
Well, I want to see Trevor Lawrence continue to improve from the standpoint of knowing where to go with the ball, how quickly he gets rid of the ball. Is he accurate in his throws? And when he can run, those are the things that he's got to do. And really, the receivers we have at least give us an opportunity to get the ball out on some quick throws. And I think that's his strength right now. I think the play action game has to continue to improve. And that's Baltimore's whole game. You know, everything is maximum protection and play action passes. That should be our game right now as well, because we, especially with the pass rush, he's going to have to get rid of the ball quickly this week. And those are things that get better with experience.
Coach, do you like the Jaguars' chances this weekend?
No.
Well, short and to the point. Absolutely. But in all seriousness, it is going to be tough. I agree with you.
It's a tough ball game. The one thing that I will say, though, is that if they can stop the power run game, they are high on points. If they can stop the power run game and eliminate the quarterback runs to a certain extent, I think it will again be a close game. And to me, that's the key. Stay out of third downs. Don't turn the ball over offensively. I think we can put some points on the board, but it will be a close game.
Dave Campo is a big part of the 1010XL family, and you always get him here Monday nights with me on Hacker After Dark. Coach, thank you very much. Have a very happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and we'll talk again this weekend on the fifth quarter.
Same to you, Hack. Enjoy a little bit of time off over Thanksgiving, let's have a good ball game this weekend.
Always enjoy talking to the coach, Dave Campo. A little Monday night coaching with Campo here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Want to update you guys on a couple of things in Mexico City right now. 49ers, Cardinals, Monday night football. It's early, about 5 minutes to go in the first quarter. Arizona with a 3-0 lead over San Francisco. We will keep you updated. And they are coming down to the wire with UNF and Duquesne on the college basketball hardwood. A minute 45 to go. UNF leads Duquesne 80-79. That'd be a nice win for North Florida if they can get it. They're up a point with a minute 45 to go at Duquesne. We will keep you updated on that as well. Coming up next, as we roll on here on Hacker After Dark, let's get back into the National Football League. Made some observations yesterday watching the Red Zone channel, one of which is I feel even better about Trevor Lawrence being the Jaguar quarterback now than I did at noon yesterday. The quarterback class of 2021 is not very good. And Trevor is head and shoulders better than anybody else that was drafted at the quarterback position last year. We'll talk about it next. Hacker After Dark on a Monday. And Jacksonville, we're glad you're with us.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. This just on Hacker After Dark.
All right, on the doorstep of the 9 o'clock hour, I will tell you that within the last, hour or so, there are reports out in the state of Mississippi, this coming from a sports director at one of the television stations in Mississippi, blue checkmark guy, for whatever that's worth, on social media, so it's not like Bob on the back porch. I mean, this guy does have a blue checkmark, and he looks like he is a sports director at one of the bigger TV stations in Mississippi, that Lane Kiffin to Auburn is going to happen. Now, he is the only person that I have seen report this. So take it for what it's worth, but we bring you breaking news when it's interesting, certainly, and this is it. This is not a random person. It is a sports director at a TV station in the state of Mississippi, saying Lane Kiffin plans to step down as Rebels coach after the Egg Bowl and that he will become the next head coach of the Auburn Tigers. Now, I'd feel a lot better about it if it was Kirk Herbstreit or Bruce Feldman or our guy Matt Hayes or Brett McMurphy or any one of those, Dennis Dodd. But there is at least a report in that state that Lane Kiffin will step down after the Egg Bowl to become the Auburn head coach. Nothing official yet, obviously, and we will wait and see what happens. We've seen this happen in the past where a local guy reports something. It turns out not to be accurate. In fact, there was a case of that here when it came to the Jaguar coaching search, if you will remember, out in the state of Arizona. So you don't ever want to jump to conclusions on these things. You want to let it see it play out, but it would be very, very interesting if Lane Kiffin were to leave Ole Miss and head to the Auburn Tigers. Also, Monday Night Football, the 49ers still trail the Cardinals 3-0 at the end of the first quarter. There are times, Denmark, when you just need to understand the lay of the land as a sports fan, and it's just simply time to, you know, put it in neutral, have the day come to an end, and start fresh tomorrow. And that's where I'm at right now. Coming off the United States blowing that game against Wales today and settling for a draw, the UNF Ospreys were just up one at Duquesne, and Duquesne scores with 0.8 seconds left. So it looks like Duquesne is going to survive UNF, and the Orlando Magic are once again getting crushed.
Now, is this worse than a game where you feel like the Jacks should win and they lose? Like, how does this feel comparing the two?
Well, it's something I'm used to. As a sports fan and teams that I follow, when you take into account the Florida Gators, the Orlando Magic, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the U.S. men's national team, the UNF Ospreys, and pretty much every fantasy football team that I manage this year, it's all been bad. There hasn't been a whole lot of good with anything this year. So at this point, I just expect for worst-case scenarios. Prime example, UNF's up one. I'm watching this game on ESPN+. I see Duquesne coming up the floor. I said, yep, they're going to score. They're absolutely going to score. And, of course, they scored. Same thing with the U.S. and Wales today. I said, they're going to find a way to blow this game. And they blew the game. Anytime my team wins, like you saw my reaction on Friday with Orlando and Chicago.
Yeah, you scared me.
When Jalen Suggs hit a three with 5 seconds to go, I was bamboozled. I couldn't believe it because that sort of thing doesn't happen to my sports teams. It was an emotional moment for me. Suggs hit a game winner. We were in the middle of the Friday Night Lights post game, and yeah, my reaction got quite the reaction from Denmark here in the 1010XL studios. All right, yesterday, watched a lot of the Red Zone channel. I don't get that opportunity all that often anymore because of the work I do on the fifth quarter, which, by the way, I love the work that I do on the fifth quarter. I wouldn't change it. But when the Jaguars are on a bye week, I settle in for 7 hours with my man Scott Hansen on the Red Zone channel. And I often find that after I watch 7 hours of the Red Zone channel, I usually need a smoke afterwards because it is just an amazing, amazing, stimulating experience for me. But watching it yesterday, one thing was very clear. The 2021 quarterback draft class, other than Trevor Lawrence, is horrible right now. Horrible. Davis Mills is awful. Trey Lance can't stay healthy. Mac Jones is okay, but that's as far as I would go there. Justin Fields is a running back playing quarterback, and whenever he's asked to make a big throw, that's not going to happen. Justin Fields literally made a throw yesterday that was Blake Bortles of 2018, where he hit his offensive lineman in the back of the head. The ball went way up in the air, and we were sitting there watching it thinking, how'd that happen? Because Justin Fields drilled his own offensive guard in the head with a football. He is a terrible thrower. Great runner. He's certainly a playmaker, but a terrible thrower. And Zach Wilson is horrendous. And Zach Wilson yesterday in the postgame press conference, I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but he was asked because the Jets lost 10-3. The offense, I believe, had 2 total yards for the Jets in the second half. And Zach Wilson was asked if he feels they let the defense down, and he said no. No. It's not a good answer. And it's an answer that's getting ripped all across the National Football League today. So whenever you want to complain about Trevor Lawrence, whenever you want to say Trevor Lawrence isn't generational, and by the way, I agree with you, he's not generational. We've had that talk. But he is leaps and bounds better than his peers that were taken in last year's draft. Not even close. And hopefully Trevor can continue to play well these last 7 games. The Baltimore Ravens come in here on Sunday at 1 o'clock. We got a touchdown in Mexico City. Jimmy Garoppolo to Brandon Ayuk for the score. 49ers take a 6-3 lead. Extra point pending. 49ers up on Arizona. Brandon Ayuk from 7 yards from Jimmy Garoppolo. Coming up next, more on the National Football League. Back into the world of college ball. Remember, Gator fans, in less than 20 minutes, former Florida Gator, All-American tight end Ben Troop will join me here on Hacker After Dark to preview the Gators and the Noles. It is a Monday night in Jacksonville, Florida, and you got it right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Former Florida Gator tight end Ben Troop coming up in less than 10 minutes. There's a lot of college football news going on tonight just to kind of keep you updated on what's happening. So, again, a report out in the state of Mississippi by a sports director at a TV station out there that Lane Kiffin is going to become the next Auburn Tigers head coach. That's the only person to report it. Again, sometimes local guys like to get a jump on the national guys. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. We'll see here, but there is that report out that Lane Kiffin will be the next head coach of the Auburn Tigers, which is interesting because there's still the Egg Bowl to play and the Iron Bowl to play this weekend on Rivalry Weekend. Other things, there was a report out earlier today from 24/7 Sports that Colorado and South Florida, two teams that have head coaching vacancies, are both having backdoor conversations with representatives for Deion Sanders from Jackson State. Now, we had talked a lot about Georgia Tech and Auburn. Maybe those jobs might be too big, particularly Auburn, for Deion right out of the gate. I don't know if you want to go from Jackson State to Auburn. That seems like a pretty big jump. But Jackson State to South Florida? Whew. Imagine Deion in the Tampa area. Imagine that with recruiting. Good grief. Colorado, I don't really know, but I mean, obviously, Deion Sanders is Deion Sanders. I would think he would do pretty well out there, and that would be a, well, I was about to say that'd be a Power 5 job, South Florida. No, I don't know. South Florida's not moving to the Big 12, right?
I actually don't. Let me check.
I think it's UCF, Houston, Cincinnati.
I think Memphis.
And Memphis, right? I don't think it's South Florida, so Colorado would have the Power 5 appeal that maybe a South Florida wouldn't necessarily have. But imagine Deion Sanders as the head coach of the South Florida Bulls. That would be something. So you got all that out there. And on a tremendously sad note, and something that was pretty much expected and was announced, Bleacher Report had this out about 15 minutes ago, the Atlantic Coast Conference has indeed canceled the scheduled football game between Virginia Tech and Virginia. I don't blame them, obviously. I mean, if you're those Virginia football players, how on earth are you expected to play football when 3 of your teammates were senselessly gunned down by a spineless coward on a bus a couple of weeks ago? So it appears that Virginia, their season has ended. That Virginia-Virginia Tech game will not be played on Saturday. So a lot of college football news going on here on a Monday night. We'll certainly keep you updated. Again, the 49ers up 7-3 on Arizona in Mexico City, about 10 minutes or so to go in the second quarter. Coming up Friday night, that's right, Friday night, the Gators, the Noles in Tallahassee. You'll hear the game right here on 1010XL. Former All-American tight end at the University of Florida, Ben Troop. He's one of my guys when it comes to talking Gator football. Let's talk with Ben Troop about whatever that was in Nashville on Saturday. Let's talk Anthony Richardson. Let's talk Billy Napier. And let's talk Florida, Florida State with Ben Troop next on a Monday night edition of Hacker After Dark. We're glad you're with us here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Now,
hello.
Another great guest on the Farrah and Farrah phone line. Brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. We are glad you are with us. Florida, Florida State. This Friday night. Yeah, first time in series history. The game will be on Black Friday. Of course, you'll hear it right here on 1010XL. Let's talk to a man that knows all about playing in the Florida-Florida State rivalry. That's former Gator All-American tight end Ben Troop. He's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Ben, how we doing?
Always good to be on with you, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Ben, thank you as always, man. It's been a while since we chatted. It was before the Georgia game. A lot has transpired since then. A lot of good, and then I don't know whatever that was Saturday in Nashville, Ben. Let's start there. My gracious, that was not a good look for the Gators coming into this Florida State game.
It really wasn't. I think the thing about this Florida team is it's a week-by-week litmus test. It's never, ever going to be something. People kept saying, have they turned the corner? Have they turned the corner? Well, I don't know if Texas A&M is a good win in 2022 or not. When you look at the season that they've had, LSU has proven to be a better team than we thought it was going to be, representing the West in Atlanta against Georgia coming up here in a couple of weeks. But the Vanderbilt game just shows you can't look past anybody. Yes, Florida did all they could to help Vanderbilt, you know, with fumbled punt returns for touchdowns and penalties and different things. But look, I shout out to Vanderbilt, because no matter what, Ryan, you know, every single year their goal is six wins. Their goal is to get the six wins, to not be seen as bottom feeders in the SEC. And they got back-to-back SEC East wins over Kentucky and Florida. So I give all the credit to Vanderbilt. I don't want to hear this thing about the weather as if the same Vanderbilt didn't have to deal with the same conditions. So shout out to Clark Lee and his team coming in, getting a big dub against my Florida Gators. I am not making excuses. I don't care that Anthony Richardson threw for 400 yards. When you take away his best asset, which is utilizing his legs, you're putting yourself in a shot or in a position to not win the football game.
Ben, the narrative was writing itself, right? They're 4-4. Brenton Cox gets dismissed from the team. You don't know where they're going. Then all of a sudden they beat A&M, and then they beat South Carolina, which is unbelievable considering what South Carolina did to Tennessee. So you're thinking, all right, they're going to end on a really positive note, build that momentum going into the offseason. And everything that they had built up in the last 2 weeks was basically crushed and destroyed, right, with what they did in Nashville.
Absolutely. And because that's how it goes. What happens at the University of Florida matters not just in the SEC, but it matters nationally. People expect Florida to go out there and beat a team like Vanderbilt. Hell, I think Vanderbilt felt as though Florida should beat them when you look at the recent history. But Vanderbilt is a team that has consistently played Florida tough. I think we get caught up in the blowout wins, kind of similar to the Kentucky when Florida had won 39 years in a row. All those games were not blowouts. Florida just found a way to win for 39 straight years. Give Vanderbilt a lot of credit, but Florida has to know this. It doesn't matter how many fights you won, it's who you fighting currently. You lost to a Vanderbilt team that, because of Hendon Hooker, I mean, I'm wishing them nothing but the best with a torn ACL. They got a shot to be bowl eligible, and that does not happen if they don't beat y'all as well as Kentucky in back-to-back weeks. So Florida got to know, look, I know with a guy like Billy Napier, who I still do believe in, It's a rebuild year, and you forget about the rebuild when you go 4-4 to 6-4, and you think you're going to go to 7-4, potentially 8-4. But now you're 6-4, staring at a Florida State team that has more than superseded expectation. But yes, I'm just like you, Ryan. It doesn't matter if Florida's playing Vanderbilt. You expect Florida to win the game. You wake up and look at the box score and think you got a glitch in your freaking internet because you say, "Wait a minute, Vanderbilt beat Florida? Yep, they beat them handsomely on the road." So I just think that at the end of the day, shout out to Vanderbilt, Florida. They got to brush themselves off and get ready for a very, very competitive Florida State bunch.
I guess the way I'm rationalizing it, because I don't live in a world where Florida loses in Nashville, I was 5 years old the last time they have done that. I'm 39 now with my own son. So it was amazing to me to watch that. But you think back to year number one, Nick Saban loses to Louisiana Monroe, right, at Alabama. Year one, Kirby Smart, I believe, also lost to Vanderbilt. In 2016, we saw Mario Cristobal lose to Middle Tennessee in year number one down in Coral Gables. So I think it happens to a lot of teams, Ben, but it doesn't make it any less painful.
It doesn't, because, yeah, I think it's great that you're using two of the greatest to ever do it with Nick Saban and Kirby Smart. But people forget about that when you look at what Georgia and Alabama is now. You don't even remember. It's like you really got to go back into the archives. Oh, man, he lost to Florida. Oh, he lost to Ole Miss. Oh, he lost to Vanderbilt. Oh, he lost to Georgia Tech in his first year. Yeah, but his worst year was 8-5. That's his worst year. And you see right now, they've gone back. They're about to go back-to-back season at Georgia, not losing a game in conference and out of conference in the SEC. That's what it become. Now, I do think Billy Napier has the capability. My last 2 years of Florida, we went 8-5 and 8-5. But we also had Ron Zook. I don't think anybody expected Ron Zook to be the savior when you come behind a guy like, you know, when you come behind a guy like Steve Spurrier. But at the end of the day, they pay you to get it done. Flat out, they pay you to get it done. I think Billy Napier, while he's definitely not Dan Mullen, when you talk about being able to address the media, you can't keep giving us that coach speak when you said it's got to be more that we weren't ready to play, we got to get better. No, you got to be more hard-nosed. When you look at Kirby Smart, when you look at Nick Saban, you might not like how they coach or how they treat their assistants, but look at the product on the field. You might not like how the cake is made, but it definitely tastes good once it comes out the oven.
Former Florida Gator, All-American tight end Ben Troop here with us on 1010XL Radio in Jacksonville. Ben, Anthony Richardson, you said he threw for 400, absolutely. But that's head-scratching to me, Ben, because I hear all these people talk about how Anthony Richardson's going to be this high draft pick, and maybe he will be. And I don't doubt that he'll have a good NFL career. But some of the stuff he does just is mind-boggling, including the last play of the game. He threw it into row G of the stands. I've never seen a Hail Mary to end the game that no one had an opportunity to catch. That was unbelievable. I assume he's gone. This is probably his last game. I doubt he plays in the bowl game. But man alive, I think he could use another year. But at the end of the day, I'm never going to begrudge the kid for going where the money is.
Yeah, I agree. I'm never going to tell a kid to turn down the money, but I think you hit the nail on the head when you talk about a guy like Anthony Richardson. When it comes to gifts, check. When it comes to instinct, question mark. When it comes to just decision mark making, question mark. Because at the end of the day, I want you to look at the Vanderbilt defenders in the end zone for the Hail Mary. They're looking like, what did he just do? I've never seen anything like that. It goes back to the fact that there are things that happen in football that you wonder, hey man, these coaches, they be aging a lot. Yeah, because look at the stuff that's happening. They're going to get blamed for stuff like that. And that has nothing to do with Billy Napier. That has everything to do with Anthony Richardson saying, you telling me you got outside the pocket to throw it in the stands. This is the third down. This is fourth down. That's it. The game is over. And you walk off the field perplexed because in your mind, it doesn't mean you're going to come down with the catch, but you got to give them something to catch. That's like throwing it out of bounds and thinking that's the best possible play when you got to make a play. Love Anthony Richardson. I do think this young man is going to be good on the next level because I think he has a skill set that translates to the next level. But whoever drafts him, get ready to go to some growing pains. Like you said, he will do something that only he can, and he will make a decision that only he would make because most people are not going to do that. It reminds me of Reggie Ball back in the day with Georgia Tech. When you threw the ball out of bounds on fourth down, and then in the post-game press conference, he said, it's just a game, dog. That's why people lose their mind. Like, what do you mean it's – Yeah, but you got Calvin Johnson over there. So I don't think he's coming back because of the NIL money, because of the Todd Machaes and the Mel Kuypers of the world. And because you know how it is, Ryan, the quarterback market in the National Football League is really, really good and really, really bad. And that's going to benefit a guy like Anthony Richardson.
There's no question about it. Ben Troop here with us, former Gator All-American tight end on 1010XL. Billy Napier, year number one, regular season comes to an end on Friday against Florida State. Ben, they've lost to Tennessee, LSU, Georgia. The Vanderbilt loss is inexcusable, but you've lost to all your rivals. Do they need to beat Florida State or at least put forth a good showing against Florida State to not have a very sour taste in the fan base's mouth heading into the offseason?
I think they got to have a good showing and beat them, because a team that's not talked about enough this year is Florida State. Florida State beat LSU first game of the year, and yes, they had a shot to beat Clemson this year. They don't just lay an egg, you know, right there in the fourth quarter. Mike Norvell has done an incredible job, and it shows what happens when you just give a guy time, when you have patience from an institution standpoint, not necessarily from a fan standpoint. With a guy, Jordan Travis, who I think is about as good as you can get when you look at what he has around him. Florida's gonna have to go out there and get a big win, not just for their psyche, but to prove to the fans and to themselves, hey man, what's the purpose of having good showings and making it to a bowl game? Because you know how, Ryan, people looking at, oh, the Dan Mullen back-to-back New Year's Six bowls, and then you look how they fell off a cliff. You got to show promise. I know you got some great recruits coming in, but your two greatest recruiting days are when you play Florida State, when you play Georgia. Yes, you came up 14 points short against Georgia, but 28-20, in the third quarter shows that you can compete with the best in the country. If you lay an egg against Florida State, all that stuff goes out the window. Because yes, you want to have a winning record. You want to try your best to get a big win against Florida State. Florida State have been themselves as of late, but they play with a lot of confidence. If they get beat up on Friday night by Florida State, Billy Napier, I think he's dealing with the media now. He's really gonna feel what that heat is if you lay an egg in Tallahassee.
Ben, my concern about this game from a Gator perspective is twofold. Number one, we saw what year three FSU looked like against year one Miami. It was obvious Norvell had a two-year head start on Cristobal because they went to South Florida and they wiped the floor with them about a month ago. I think something similar potential could happen here. There is something to be said for year three for that FSU staff compared to year one for the Florida staff. And, oh, by the way, it's a night game at Doak Campbell, and those Seminole fans are going to be foaming at the mouth. They smell blood in the water because of the beatings Florida's given them the last 4 years.
That's what you want, though. That's what you want. With Florida State and Florida, it's always, hey, man, where are we now? How far we've come, and how much farther do we need to go? No matter what, I don't care. Mike Norvell, he's going to be very, very complimentary with Florida coming in this week. And obviously, Billy Napier, he's going to be very, very complimentary. But Mike Norvell knows in the back of his mind, I need this win like I needed any win this year. Yes, we beat the brakes off of Miami. Yes, we got a shot to win the state this year. But if we don't beat Florida, it's going to mean nothing. That's this incredible season that they've had. It's going to mean nothing, because it shows that, man, with everything we've done, with Florida even being in their first year, we still couldn't beat them. If you are on the other side with Billy Napier, you got to show that what you're doing, people are believing in it. Because a lot of times people are going to say, at the end of this year, they're going to say, man, you had Anthony Richardson. I mean, you had Brent Cox, even though he's gone. You had Javon Dexter. You had Ventura Miller, even though he's going to be out the first half because of the targeting call. I think for Florida, they need to show that they are competing in this state. Because, yeah, Florida's not going to play Miami this year, so we don't know how that game would have went first-year coach versus first-year coach. But I think for Billy Nate, he's going to have a good showing. Because, like you said, I think Florida State wants nothing else to take out some years of frustration. They don't want it to be a good game. They want it to be a bludgeoning of them Florida Gators. Because if it is, it shows that, look, man, it's just going to make recruiting that much better for Florida State, that much harder for Florida. And you got 364 days to let it sink in that this ain't your same old Florida State Seminoles.
Ben, as we begin to wrap up, again, former Gator tight end Ben Troop here with us, as we begin to wrap up, we already seen a lot of attrition, right? I think the number is six already, either guys that have been dismissed from the team or entered the transfer portal. You know that number is going to grow, probably effective this weekend, right, after the regular season comes to an end. I mean, this looks like it's going to be a pretty crazy offseason from the amount of guys leaving the program to what Florida's doing in recruiting, and you got to know Billy Napier is going to be attacking that transfer portal almost immediately.
Yeah, and Ryan, unfortunately for a lot of these players, this is what happens in college football, because no matter what, you don't pay coaches, you know, $7, $8, $9, $10 million to start their careers and think that the current roster is going to be good enough. A lot of those guys kind of saw, you saw the Whittemores of the world. You know, he's moving on. Even his little brother who was committed to Florida, he's going to move on to go, you know, to Mississippi State. You talk about a guy in Brenton Cox who got released from the team. It's going to be guys hit the transfer portal. And to me, what people don't understand is a lot of times that's not by choice. They have been told, hey, man, we're not going to renew your scholarship. You're not a part of our future plans. So I think for a guy in Billy Napier, number one, you need to go out there and have a good showing again, because you're talking about the guys that are currently on the roster who you're going to need moving forward, and the guys that's going to come in. Florida's going to look way different in 2022, because you're going to have a lot of guys who was on the team 2023. You had a lot of guys that was on the team this year that won't be there. But you got a transfer portal for Florida. It's going to be devastating. Some teams going to be able to benefit from some incredible players, but I will say this. So these fan bases out here who have something to say about 18 to 22-year-olds who's doing the best they can to make the best decision they can for their future, who's talking trash to them because they're going to rival schools, you need to have a serious, serious look in the mirror, because I think that kind of stuff is crazy, especially with our head coaches like Lane Kiffin possibly leaving Ole Miss because he get to make more money to go to Auburn.
That's a fair point, no question about it. I think Florida's going to lose some guys in the transfer portal. I also think Florida's going to be bringing in a lot of guys from the transfer portal. And, Ben, I guess, my final question for you, if Anthony Richardson leaves, you wonder if the starting quarterback for the Florida Gators in 2023 is currently playing at another school, because I'm not sure if you hand over the reins to a Jack Miller, a Jalen Kitna, a Jaden Rashada coming in next year. None of those guys have ever taken a snap, or in Kitna's case, I guess he's taken, what, about 20 snaps in college football. You got to wonder if Florida may look for a starting quarterback in the transfer portal this offseason.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it might have to be, because I think the thing is, too, bigger than the guys having talent, you want them to see what it looks like. Like, I mean, I know about, you know, Rashad and how him flipping from Miami to come to Florida. You talk about Kitna and company. Yes, I mean, Jack Miller. It's not that those guys aren't capable. Sometimes I got to see what it takes. I mean, everybody think they want to play big-time college football in the SEC, but the quarterback position is the most scrutinized position in sports, especially when it comes to college football. So I do think it's a kid out there in the transfer portal that Florida has a big enough, good enough product, obviously, on the field, and obviously the brand is big enough. And you see the type of NIL money that a guy like Anthony Richards, that's going to be the most enticing thing. And for people that say, well, why would a kid want to go to a school for the money? Name me a head coach don't pick a school for the money. They can talk about culture. They can talk about the love of the game. Yeah, but you also getting 7, 8, 9, and 10 M's next to your name. I think that's a good enough reason to go to any school. Hopefully we get a big-time quarterback coming out of the transfer portal.
You can check out Ben Tripp's podcast, 84 Reasons. Does a terrific job with that. And, of course, he was a terrific tight end and an All-American at the University of Florida. Ben, always thank you for the time, man. Have a terrific Thanksgiving. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Ryan, man, I always appreciate being on what you say.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The Jaguar bye week in the rearview mirror, Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens are in town on Sunday. Of course, you'll hear the game right here on 1010XL. Let's talk a little Jaguar football with my friend John Shipley. You can read him on Jaguar Report, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. John, how we doing?
I'm doing good, my friend. How about you?
John, we're good, man. Thank you for the time. I trust you enjoyed the bye week like I did. And I got to tell you, watching the games yesterday, I took a good hard look at Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, and the rest of the guys in that 2021 quarterback draft class. And I got to tell you, John, I feel even better about Trevor Lawrence now than I did before yesterday, because the other quarterbacks in that draft class, quite frankly, just aren't very good right now.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely a case of, you know, when Jaguars fans see a negative game out of the lines, like I said a couple weeks ago against the Broncos, and people are coming out in droves, you know, being concerned about whether or not he's a guy, even at his worst, he's still, you know, markedly better than some of the other guys who were taken in that class. So whether or not he lives up to the generational talent billing, you know, that's a debate for another day. But as for a debate of who's been the best quarterback of that class and if they pick correctly, because, you know, yeah, it was an obvious pick. Everybody called Lawrence the best quarterback prospect since Luck, et cetera. I mean, they still had to ultimately make the pick and make the decision. And it looks like right now, you know, they made the right one. Lawrence, you know, he's still obviously growing, developing. He's not where anybody thinks he ultimately needs to be moving forward. But he's improved in his second year. I think you can say that for him and for Justin Fields. Mac Jones, I think he is what he is. I think on his best day, he's probably close to average. Justin Fields has been really explosive over the last month or so as they've turned to him as more of a runner. But just as a simple drop-back passer, his numbers really aren't near Lawrence's. He has flashes, but nowhere near the consistency. Trey Lance, you know, he's a giant question mark. He's only thrown, I think, 102 passes in the NFL in two seasons, which is staggering for a guy you give up that many picks for. And then Davis Mills and Zach Wilson are two guys I think just, you know, legitimately are not NFL starting quarterbacks. So you look at that class as a whole, and I think Lawrence and Fields are far and away the most impressive. And right now, if you had to pick one guy out of that group to build around it, I think it's usually Lawrence.
John Shipley of Jaguar Report here with us on 1010XL in Jacksonville. John, it's been about a month since you and I talked, and when they lost to the Giants a few weeks ago, at that point I pretty much said, all right, the playoffs are probably over, the division's probably over. To me, it is all about Trevor Lawrence moving forward, and I believe that now stronger than ever. Do I want the Jaguars to win a majority of these next seven games? Of course. I'm not talking about tanking by any stretch of the imagination, but is there a big difference between 7-10 or 6-11 or 5-12? I don't really know. I just know that I want to see Trevor perform well. And if after every Sunday I can say Trevor Lawrence put the team in position to win that game, then John, I really don't care what happens win loss wise over the next 7 weeks. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's kind of a microism of the entire season. I think everybody kind of entered the season with the mindset of, you know, this year is about seeing if Trevor Lawrence can take a step forward and improve from a bad rookie season. You know, what the final record is, it really is what it is. And I mean, that's really how I view the second half of the season. I think strictly, you know, speaking as a program and as a team, you want to see them string together a couple of wins to enter next year with some momentum. I mean, even this year, you know, their win in week 18 last year against the Colts gave them some momentum entering the offseason. And that win, you know, big picture-wise, meant nothing. So I think just getting some positive feelings and getting some W's on the board in Doug Peterson's first year would be pretty big for entering his second offseason with the team. But overall, I think, you know, if they go 0-7 over this final stretch, but Trevor Lawrence plays like a Pro Bowler, I think they would take that over going, you know, 7-0 and Trevor Lawrence looking like Zach Wilson did yesterday.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Aside from Trevor Lawrence, John, he's obviously the biggest. What are some of the other big storylines you think fans should watch over these next 7 weeks?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think seeing how guys, especially in young spots, step up, I think Chad Muma and Devin Lloyd are going to be, you know, really fascinating to watch over these last couple of weeks. You know, was Chad Muma going in for Devin Lloyd, you know, for as many snaps as he did against Kansas City? Was that a one-off, or are we going to kind of see moving forward, you know, a lot more Muma, maybe a mix of the two, or maybe, you know, maybe it's Muma's job going forward? I think if it's a mix of the two and you're entering next offseason with a question of, you know, who's your second starting linebacker, Chad Muma or Devin Lloyd, I think that's a major talking point because, you know, Lloyd is a guy you moved up for in the first round. You know, you gave up significant assets to select him. So for him to be entering year two without a hold on the job would be pretty, you know, staggering. And then otherwise, I think, you know, just how can the young guys on the offense continue to develop? How can, you know, not just Lawrence, but how can Travis Etienne, how can Luke Fortner continue to take steps moving forward? The way I always view young players in the NFL is, especially in their rookie years, this is probably as bad as they're going to be, you know, in their NFL career. They're probably going to be better every single year skill-wise than they are as rookies. So with Etienne, it's just I really believe he's a guy who you can see him getting better each week, and considering the production he's already had, with that in mind, I think it's just bonkers to kind of watch him continue trying to improve.
John, you mentioned Chad Muma. Again, John Shipley here with us from Jaguar Report. Are we getting close to the point where, you know, Buster Brown, the corner, Snoop Connor at running back, do you want to start seeing some of these young guys to see what they have moving forward?
I think you do, and I think we've already kind of seen that over the last few weeks. I think, honestly, this staff has done a good job of playing its young talent. You know, Snoop Connor is probably the exception to that because, I mean, they've had so many guys in front of him at the running back position, but just in terms of Muma and Monteric Brown, I think those are two guys, you know, you want to see more of. Snoop, it's hard for me because, you know, you obviously want to see ETN in the game, you know, probably about 70 to 75% of snaps. If you want to give Connor more looks over a guy like Jermichael Hasty, I understand that because at the end of the day, you did trade up for him. So you got to give him a carry at some point. But I think ultimately it's more important to get those defensive guys snaps.
Let me throw this at you. And again, it's just something I just thought of here. Juwan Taylor is a free agent. You obviously want to protect Trevor Lawrence with the best five. But if Juwan Taylor is not in your future plans, will we see Walker Little in the next 7 weeks at right tackle?
I don't think so, just because that isn't the way I think the Jaguars, you know, operate, you know, whether on a coaching staff level or front office level. I don't think that, you know, at least in terms of preparing for next Sunday, that they're looking ahead, you know, to the 2023 season and developing Walker Little. I think that, you know, each week they're going to start the guy that they think, you know, gives them the best chance to win. And, you know, they thought that was Juwan Taylor at the end of the preseason, and he's been arguably their best pass protector this year. So I don't think, unless there's injury, that you're going to see Walker Little. But I do think, you know, if I had to guess on the situation, Juwan Taylor does become a free agent next year. They let him walk, try to maybe get a compensatory pick, and start Walker Little at right tackle moving forward.
You know, speaking of free agents to be, and I promise we will get into Baltimore, but I'm curious. I guess Juwan Taylor, DeJuan Smoot, and Evan Engram are the big three. It'll be interesting to see what happens with those three guys moving forward. And then, by all indications, those are the three you might want to re-sign. By all indications, guys like Shaq Griffin, maybe a Roy Robertson Harris, maybe even a Rayshon Jenkins, with the amount of money you save by releasing them, you got to figure some of those guys are playing their final remaining games here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Jaguars are in a tough spot financially next year. They're rolling over a decent amount of money. They do a good job of making sure that they're not paying into the future on any current contracts. But, you know, they're going to have to cut a few guys who have, you know, some of those more expensive cap hits to make sure that they can be flexible next season, sign a draft class, you know, sign some, in my opinion, probably minor deals in free agency. I think Shaq Griffin and Roy Robson Harris are the two biggest names to watch in that regard. You know, they're both starters who carry a big number next year. I don't think either has played to a level that would, you know, justify keeping them around on that number. Rayshon Jenkins, to me, is a tough one because, you know, I mean, you look how much money they would save by releasing him, and it on paper sounds like an obvious move, but he, to me, has been their second-best defender this year behind Tyson Campbell.
John Shipley of Jaguar Report. All right, Baltimore does come in. Now let's talk about the 2022 season. Baltimore does come in. Lamar Jackson comes in. John Harbaugh comes in. Calais Campbell makes his return to Jacksonville. John, on paper, this looks rough because I remember, as well as you do, what Daniel Jones did with the RPO game against the Jaguars. If Daniel Jones can do that, my gracious, what Lamar Jackson might do.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, ever since I've been covering the Jaguars, that they just have not been able to stop mobile quarterbacks. And this year, it's been really that more so than ever. You know, Daniel Jones, Jalen Hurts, you know, hurt them a lot on the ground. Patrick Mahomes hurt them a lot on the ground. Even Russell Wilson, who's not even really a scrambler anymore, made a lot of big plays with his feet. So the Jaguars, for whatever reason this year, and really the last couple of years, they've struggled when it comes to, you know, stopping running quarterbacks. And Lamar, in my opinion, is probably the second toughest quarterback in the league to defend behind Mahomes, just because, I mean, he can turn a broken play into an 80-yard touchdown run just with, you know, one missed angle.
It'll certainly be something to watch. Hopefully they learned their lesson when Daniel Jones did what he did a couple of weeks ago. Again, final moments with John Shipley of Jaguar Report. All right, on the offensive side of the ball, we know how physical Baltimore's defense is. We know the type of football they want to play. It's a great test for Trevor Lawrence in this offense, John, because clearly when Baltimore's defense is on, you saw it yesterday, albeit Carolina's really bad, but Baltimore also made them look really bad yesterday. So a good test for the Jaguar offense on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is one of the biggest tests the Jaguars offense is going to have all year. I think when you get to the end of the season and you talk about, you know, the best defenses they played, you know, probably Denver Broncos, I'd probably say the Baltimore Ravens and then Dallas Cowboys in a few weeks. And I think those are the three games that will probably tell you the most about where the Jaguars are at offensively and where they need to improve. I mean, I do think there are certain matchups against the Ravens that they can take advantage of. The Ravens have struggled a lot against slot receivers, you know, for one this season. I think this could be a big Christian Kirk week. But overall, I think this is a great week just to see how far along, you know, Trevor Lawrence has come just in terms of, you know, the mental part of the game and reading defenses out and facing different schemes. Because what he's going to face Sunday with Baltimore's defense is, you know, probably unlike anything he's seen scheme-wise to this point.
John, do you anticipate them changing, or do you believe they did change anything during the bye? Will we see different things on offense and defense that we haven't seen the first 10 weeks?
I really think you might see more Chad Muma. I think you might see, you know, different sets of players, mainly on defense. I think the offense right now, they're in a relatively good spot for where they want to be and where I really think they could be. And just in terms of other guys on their offense, I'm not sure who else, you know, you want to give more snaps to over a guy who isn't playing well right now. I think at receiver, you know, I think Marvin Jones, Zay Jones, Christian Kirk are all playing well enough to fend off, you know, Tim Jones, Kendrick Pryor. Etienne's been the best player on the offense. The offensive line's kind of set. And then Evan Engram has been their best tight end. So not as much on offense personnel-wise, but I could see on defense. I really do think you're going to see more Chad Muma. Monterrick Brown is another guy. And I think those are the big ones to watch.
If we do see more of Chad Muma, does that say more about him or does that say more about a concern for Devin Lloyd?
I think it says more about Devin Lloyd. I don't think no matter how badly you want to see, you know, what your third round top 75 overall pick has, I don't think you want to take your first round off pick off the field really for any reason. So I think it says more of a, you know, kind of a concern about Lloyd. Cause I mean, it's not like when Muma's gotten onto the field that, you know, he's setting a new standard for linebacker player or anything. I mean, he's looked like a rookie linebacker the same way.
And you know, and I tend to agree with that, no question about it. And I guess the question is, what happened there with Devin Lloyd? Because he missed the entire preseason. Yeah, John, he came on in the start of the regular season. They were talking, and I was one of them. I mean, I'm guilty of this. Defensive rookie of the year, right? He was great the first month. And then as the weeks have gone on, it does not appear to be getting better. It appears to be going downhill.
Yeah, no, I really think the comparison I would have for looking at his season now in retrospect is as the season's gone on, I think the start of his season had a little bit of, you know, kind of a Darius Leonard type, Shaquille Leonard now aspect to it where, you know, maybe down and down he wasn't playing overall that well, but the ball just kept finding him. You know, tip passes, I believe both of his interceptions were tip passes, one by Foley Fatakasi, one by Tyson Campbell, fumble recoveries where, you know, it's fumble cover against the Chiefs. He was in the right spot at the right time. He actually went, you know, when you watch the all 22 of that play, he actually went the wrong way on the play and the ball just kind of ended up bouncing to him. So I think that's kind of the year that he's had. He just to me has not looked like somebody who's ready for what the kind of offenses that you're going to see at the NFL level and how teams are going to really pick guys apart in terms of mismatches and dialing on certain guys. And I mean, he was supposed to be the rookie that was supposed to be, you know, plug and play and further along. And so far, it's looked, Trayvon Walker has looked more like that guy to me.
John, leave us with this. Do they win on Sunday?
I really think it's going to be closer than people think just because Baltimore is in a tough spot right now, but I got Baltimore winning. I'll go Baltimore by 4.
Should be a defensive battle. Hopefully that's the goal if the Jaguars can play good defense against Lamar Jackson and maybe win the game there in the fourth quarter. John Shipley from Jaguar Report, always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. John, thank you for the time, man. A very happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and we'll do it again soon.
Hey, thanks for having me on, my friend. Happy Thanksgiving.
John Shipley of Jaguar Report here with us on 1010XL in Jacksonville. And that'll just about wrap it up for what has been an unbelievably busy Monday night here on Hacker After Dark. We got a lot of people to thank, including my man John Shipley of Jaguar Report. You also heard from former Gator All-American tight end Ben Troop talking Florida and Florida State. And, of course, it would not be Monday night here on Hacker After Dark during football season without Monday night coaching with Campo. My man Dave Campo joined us in hour number one here on Hacker After Dark. We'll be back tomorrow night on a Tuesday. Are you kidding me? Our late night? Where else would you rather be, Jacksonville, Florida, than hanging out with Dylan Denmark and yours truly here on Hacker After Dark from 10 to midnight here on 1010 AM and 92.5 FM? We hope you join us then. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the Hacker, Ryan Green. And Jacksonville, thank you for hanging out with us here on Hacker After Dark on a Monday on both 1010XL and 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Monday, and we'll do it all over again on a Tuesday beginning at 10 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.